Welcome to the Travel Pulse Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Bowman, the executive editor of TravelPulse.com. The Globus family of brands has so many ways that you can bring the world to your clients. From the vibrant world of touring with Globus, the value-driven adventures of Cosmos, or the majestic river cruising itineraries with Avalon Waterways. And the best thing about them is they're always here for you as your partner in profit. Whether it's getting you the high commissions you deserve, making their travel advisor tools as user-friendly and accessible as possible, Globus family of brands wants to send the message to all travel advisors saying, we've got you. What's up, everyone? Today is Monday, June 17th, a special Monday episode of the show. It's good to be back after missing last week while traveling, and coming back to fun news is always great, too. The Travel Pulse podcast was recently named one of the best travel news podcasts by FeedSpot, so very grateful for that, and very excited for a fun show ahead. Also want to note that voting is still open for the 2024 Travvy Awards. You can head over to travvyawards.com to cast your ballot on who is the best of the best in travel. We got a fun show for you today. We'll be talking big news as always. You can reach out to us on the podcast at podcast@travelpulse.com. And we have a hotline for the show now. You can call in and leave a message if you'd like. 201-381-3017 is the Travel Pulse podcast number. And now joining me on the show is Becky Lukovich, owner of Bella Travel Planning. Welcome to the show, Becky. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Hey, Eric. Thanks for having me on. I am a 20-something-year-old veteran of the travel industry. I love, love, love this industry. I've been a luxury travel advisor for almost all of my career. Started off, like everybody, just building client by client. And nowadays, I live in Atlanta and have a small team under me. And yeah, I'm grateful to be here.
Yeah, so excited to have you on, and always good to have a fellow Georgia person on the broadcast here and in the podcast. We'll have to do one in person someday and just get a bunch of Atlanta people, and that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
Becky and I are going to talk a little bit about over-tourism and the issues and the changes that have come up across that, across the world here. But before we get into that, as we do for every episode, we're going to dive in first with what's been trending in the world of travel in the last week. And we begin with the theme park updates of the world. So just recently last week, Universal Orlando, they opened up their DreamWorks Land, which features Shrek, Trolls, and Kung Fu Panda. And they've got a whole different host of summer activities lined up for that. Still TBD on when Epic Universe, the open date is what we'll find out one of these days. I'm hoping we know by Christmas time. Just that's my guess, maybe. But I'm also just a little bit hopeful that, you know, for good news of the holiday season. So maybe we'll find out then. But they did just tease yesterday, and I got a piece in the mail today that something's coming on June 20th. But it's about their Dark Universe side of things in the Epic Universe new theme park that's supposed to come out sometime in 2025. And then also in Orlando, on the Disney side, you've had Disney. They were just approved for a new $17 billion development plan, which has expansion coming over the next decade. And the end of the Disney-DeSantis feud, if you will, as the committee approved that. And so many different mainstream headlines was like, Disney-DeSantis feud, it's over. And anyway, and Disney also opened up their Lookout Key at Lighthouse Point, the private island destination in Eleuthera, Bahamas. It's really beautiful, even with that incredibly long pier that you probably heard about happening, and so many different posts and pictures about that long pier. But it's all done for environmental purposes and good reasons why. But Disney not, you know, slowing down anytime soon. A whole host of summer offerings as well. They've got Tiana's Bayou Adventure opening up June 28th. They have the return of the Country Jamboree coming up in July 17th. So a lot of new things, and then gearing up for busy fall and holiday stuff as well. So I met up with their executives last week during a media event, and I was traveling, so that's why there was no podcast last week. So you can review and read my full report on TravelPulse.com there. But a lot's going on for Disney, a lot's going on in Orlando. Becky, your thoughts on Disney now, the future, and you know, the future of theme parks in Orlando?
I'm so excited to hear about the Country Bear review. I'm really glad that the whole DeSantis Disney feud is hopefully behind us. I still think Disney's magical. I mean, I know they're this big giant, but it's still a place of imagination, and it's where kids and adult kids at heart, you go and you see things that are just freaking cool, and it just opens imagination. It's great for family time. I'm really glad that they are able to get over that hump.
Yeah, that was some long stretch of back and forth throughout 2023, and I'm glad to see those, you know, sort of headlines should be ending with this sort of stuff. And, you know, the committee approving their $17 billion plans. That's a lot of money. So a lot of new jobs for in Florida as well over the next decade as they expand and build who knows what. I tried to get some information on that, you know, with all the executives. And they held firm, and they did say, you know, the big boss, Josh D'Amaro, said that in August, their D23 event, they're going to reveal a lot of news, and it's going to be the biggest they've ever done at the D23 event. So if you're a big Disney fan, you know, get to that in Anaheim. I'll have a reporter there. We'll have certainly all the news coverage happening on that. So I'm excited to see what sort of news drops from that. And obviously the continued news, you know, on the Universal side as well with Epic Universe. There's a lot to be excited about if you're a big theme park fans, because it doesn't appear that the news is really slowing down on any of that front, and we just have to wait a little bit. Jumping over to air travel news, we've got FAA and Boeing, and talk about continued headlines continuing on and on and on, longer than we would really hope. That's where we're at with stuff here. FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, for those unaware, they are investigating both major airplane manufacturers now. Why? Well, they're saying they're investigating whether documents were falsified pertaining to the use of titanium in the manufacture of some airplanes by Boeing and Airbus, this reported by the New York Times. So falsifying documents at that scale? Yikes. And also the FAA, they came out and they did accept blame for lack of oversight of Boeing with their FAA administrator. Mike Whitaker said at a Senate Commerce Committee hearing last week, saying, quote, "Before January 5th, the FAA's approach was too hands-off, too focused on paperwork audits, and not focused enough on inspections. We have changed that approach over the last several months, and those changes are permanent," he added. "We have now moved to a more active, comprehensive oversight model, the audit plus inspection approach, which allows the FAA to have much higher insight into Boeing's operations. I will personally remain engaged to ensure Boeing executes the necessary changes to transform its safety culture and address its production quality issues," end quote. Whew, that was a lot, and I love it, Mike. So, Becky, your thoughts on FAA and Boeing and all this continued mess here?
I mean, I think when consumer safety, public safety wins, I mean, I think that can be a good thing. I really think there needs to be some responsibility and accountability for how some of these planes have been built in a way that they malfunction in a tragic, tragic way. And I think that's to keep that conversation going and not just sweep it under the rug of, oh, it was a bad thing that happened. I always like to find the why. And if the why is that there were falsified papers and falsified documents and they weren't using the correct materials, then yeah, definitely. They need to hold them accountable for the way they're building the planes.
Absolutely. Yeah. My thing with this, I love that quote. I love that he said, "I will personally remain engaged," and very strong quote. What you want to hear, you know, from the administrator here on this, but just in general of the FAA, I mean, I know this guy's a bit newer here, but I mean, Boeing 7730 Max, like the Boeing Max stuff, like this Boeing has been in headlines with some safety issues for a number of years now. So, I mean, it's nice that you can, you know, say this now, but some of this maybe should have been said few years ago, and the approach of more hands-on inspections and things, and maybe things like January 5th incidents with the, you know, door panels being ripped off wouldn't have happened. I don't know. I know there's been a lot of whistleblowers. Yeah, exactly. And there's been so many different headlines of whistleblowers coming out and all this, and let's just get past that, and let's hope that, you know, statements like this that, you know, the administrator just made there is going to be, you know, what the future actually holds, and we can address this and get more of the safety culture fixed over there. And that's what we're hopeful for. And we have less, you know, a fewer of these headlines here, but I kind of thought we would by now, but here we are in June and, you know, still talking about all this mess. So who knows?
Yeah, but we're still talking about it. So if it hasn't been resolved, we should still be talking about it and not just let it be yesterday's news. So I'm glad there is some forward progress.
Very well said, yes. And in other air travel news, we've got the U.S. State Department reopening online passport renewal portal. This is a beta program, once again, a limited time offering, if you will. They've done this a couple times with the online passport renewal. So it's designed to speed up processing for travelers who meet certain criteria in efforts to avoid kind of issues that faced last summer, as there was, you know, quite the boom in tourism again, as people kicking back off with a vengeance in summer travel. And there was quite the backlog on some passport renewal processes, and would have loved, you know, more of the online thing then. Speaking personally, because I had to actually renew my passport, I was one of those people last year. I didn't have to wait too long, but I heard some not so fortunate stories out there too. But Becky, let's hope this beta program becomes like an everyday thing, right? It just kind of seems like we should have already had online portal renewal. I don't know. What do you think of that?
Absolutely. I don't see why not. We can renew our TSA these days via, you know, online. I think it's a long time coming, and it's definitely delayed in coming these days, especially now that people are returning back to work and things like that. It's hard to find time to personally take your things to the post office and go get the things that you need. And where you had, if you had an online modality, it's so much easier to renew your passport, especially for the renewals. Maybe not for the first time. They want you to have an in-person appointment, that type of thing. But to me, the renewals, that's similar to what we have with our driver's license, with our car tags, those types of things. So it's definitely a little late to the game, but I'm excited that it's here. I'm so excited.
Yes,
if only we could get that time shortened from the 8 weeks to
right. Yeah, I mean, it's 2024, so technology is here. Like, let's use it and let's get going with this. So yeah, let's hope this becomes the norm, you know, and in 5 years from now that there's no more, it's just a seamless thing of renewal, especially, you know, for the frequent flyers out there who are, you know, getting lots and lots of passport stamps and updating things there. Time will tell on that. We'll see how this beta program goes, but hopefully it's all smooth sailing because that benefits every one of us here in the travel industry listening. So jumping over to other air travel news as we sort of round things out, we got to take a look at Southwest and United. First, Southwest Airlines investor calling for a board overhaul due to poor execution. This is from New Elliott Investment Management. They report a stake about $1.9 billion in Southwest. So they called for an overhaul of Southwest leadership and sending in a letter that read, quote, poor executive and leadership's stubborn unwillingness to evolve the company's strategy have led to deeply disappointing results for shareholders, employees, and customers alike. Interesting take there, new investors. Becky, your thoughts on Southwest? Do you fly it often? Do you sell it much? What's your take here?
You know, I'm in Atlanta, so, you know, I am very loyal to one airline.
You can say it.
Because I'm in Atlanta. I'm definitely a Delta girl. You know, that's just how it is. But I do know a lot of people who do travel Southwest, and they have a lot of things going for them. They have a lot of times the price. It's not always the least expensive, but it definitely has the price, the seats, the service is still there. It's a different kind of service. It's not, you know, it's a different kind of service. I think though, with Delta, even post-pandemic, keeping the no change fees, I think that's given Southwest a run for their money, because that was really something Southwest had going for them, was they didn't have the change fees when the big guys were 250 plus a pop. And so now, at least with Delta, that's gone, and some of the others too. And so you've got the no check backs, but you have to wait in the line. So it's, you know, and could they revamp it? I kind of go both ways. Part of me sees that the leadership of Southwest says, you know what, this is who we are. This is our model, and we're going to stay true to the model. Otherwise, we're no different than everybody else. And then the other part of me is like, well, what else could you do? You know, could you put a disco ball and some disco lights? Or no, just kidding. But
so their flight attendants would, though. They would be the flight attendants that would do that. I feel like, of the industry.
Right? That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I saw this. I was traveling at the time, and I saw this headline come through, and I was just like, wow, okay. And then, I mean, the thing with airlines, you know, some of the customers out there are fiercely loyal. I mean, you said yourself you're a Delta girl. I consider myself a Delta guy being based here in Atlanta, so that's just the most convenient, the most options here. But, you know, for Southwest, are you really targeting that Delta customer? Yes, some, but maybe you're going more after the United and the American loyalists, so to speak, I guess, trying to pull them away if you're, you know, thinking in terms of that scope. But yeah, maybe mixing it up a little. I know they're coming out with some newer seats. I got to see those at Asta in Dallas a couple weeks ago, which was nice. You know, comfortable new seating. You know, that will perk the ears up of some people for sure, because, you know, the airplane seats in general, and broadly speaking of plane seats, are not all that great. But as it comes to Southwest, you kind of mentioned the service a little bit. That kind of segues us into what the United stuff here, and with service, their CEO, Scott Kirby, sort of trashed Frontier and Spirit, and not so much on Southwest, but directly because they're not, you know, the low budget, but some people consider them, you know, with the prices on things. But it, as it relates to Scott Kirby and United Airlines, when he was asked about the long-term feasibility of discounted airlines, he said that their strategy was, quote, fundamentally flawed and that customers hate it. And he also believes that low-cost carriers do not treat their customers with the proper respect. Frontier CEO Barry Biffle, he had previously stated before any of this ever come out, I don't think he's issued any sort of rebuttal that I've seen to United's CEO, but he's said in the past that low cost always wins, which prompted Scott Kirby of United to say that he disagrees with that, and that's dead wrong, and reiterated that, quote, the best service always wins. So your thoughts on sort of this, I don't want to say trash, it's I don't want to say hot shots here, but I mean, it's a little bit of a jab, if you will.
I think it's definitely posturing and positioning. I think two things. I think, first of all, I have heard the feedback from some of the more budget-oriented airlines and the service or lack thereof, and the inflexibility, the luggage issues, the charging for multiple things, that type of thing. I have heard that negative feedback. I don't agree that their days are done and they're over. And I can't remember who said this to me, but there was this business quote that I heard one time that says, if you want to be a success in anyone, you have to be one of three things. You have to be the first, you have to be the cheapest, or you have to be the best. And if you're one of those three things, you had the biggest chance of becoming successful. And so I think the low-cost airlines are not going to go. They're not going to go anywhere. Look in Europe. You have EasyJet, yep. You have Ryanair, and then a smattering of others. And they're here to stay. And you just know, okay, I'm flying EasyJet because they go where I want to go. And I just know that the $39 is not real. I know that I'm going to pay for bags. I know I'm going to pay for online check-in to be able to use the app, to be able to breathe, to get a snack, to have a seat, to have whatever. You're going to pay for all these things, and you're going to end up paying maybe more like $200 or $300 as opposed to $39, but they're there to stay.
I agree.
So, yeah. So I think it's just a little bit of posturing from both sides.
Yeah, and they're not going to go away. I mean, they're taking some hits, obviously, when they tried to do the merger. Spirit tried to do the merger with JetBlue, and that didn't really work out. Maybe they'll get back with Frontier. I know they owe a lot of money, but yeah, there's a place for that cheap flight and that super cheap flight. And that, like, I think your analogy there using looking at Europe is key. Like, Ryanair and EasyJet, they certainly take the reputation hits from time to time, just like Frontier and Spirit have from time to time over the years. And they're still hanging here. They're still hanging around. I don't see them going away. You know, best service always wins kind of comment is, you know, true to a sense, yes, but you're going to always have those type of flyers.
It depends on the traveler.
Yeah, exactly. It's subjective.
It depends on the traveler.
Right? You're always going to have the person that's like, well, I don't want to pay, you know, $400 for a flight when I see that this, or $330 for just an example. I was looking at flights recently, and it was like 300 something for the Delta flight, and it was $86 for Frontier. And yeah, obviously this is going to add on to a little bit as you know, do more things to your Frontier ticket there. And it's not going to be exactly 86, as you mentioned, you know, the 39, the EasyJet, but you're going to get people who are going to latch onto that 86 and then try to do their best to stay as close to that 86 as they possibly can. So they don't, you know, jump right in with 300. So that traveler was always going to exist.
I think the one difference between the budget airlines in Europe and here is a lot of times in Europe, they hit those secondary markets. A lot of times my only option is an EasyJet to where I want to go. Hmm. So I think here in the US, I think perhaps if they were to create some one-ways, to different places, then perhaps that they would see a little more success that way instead of competing on the same routes.
Yeah, interesting thoughts there. Let us know, listener, what you think. podcast@travelpulse.com is the email about this whole mess with the low-cost carriers and any of the other stuff we talked about on today's news or anything we didn't get to that you'd like us to discuss on the podcast. Drop me a line. Love to hear from you out there. So now we're going to jump over to our theme of the week on over tourism. Do you have clients asking you about guided touring and exciting destinations? How about river cruising? If you do, you probably heard of Globus family of brands, including Globus, Cosmos, and Avalon Waterways. The family of brands has also just launched a new travel advisor portal with exciting enhancements like the ability to share their itineraries with your contact details, not to mention new training modules that get you access to exciting perks and travel advisor discounts. Check it out at traveladvisorportal.com. So, Becky, what are your thoughts on overtourism as we head into the 2024 summer travel season?
You know, I think overtourism is definitely an issue that we've been facing for a long time, not just this summer, but summer after summer. I do see it increasing, and I think it's really becoming an issue. And I think really what's happened with overtourism is we're taking this vision, like say Joe in Topeka has this vision that I want to go to Paris someday. And then he's like, okay, so I want to go to Paris and do all this. And he finally creates this trip to Paris, but the why is forgotten. It's become such a commodity, such a what's the low dollar, what's the cheapest I can get there, and I'll just do all the things that are included. And so suddenly Joe, who is excited to go to Paris, finds himself slogging through a bunch of tourists, going to museums that he doesn't care about, with a 20,000 other people sitting out somewhere because he doesn't know where else to go apart from his tour group. And what happens is you just have these masses of people sitting around waiting for the next thing. And I think that is creating this chaos where you have tourists behaving badly, where they're overrunning the locals, and they're not saying, wow, I love Paris, and I'm going to sit at this cafe and just really take in the culture. They've become consumers of it. And it's like, check, done that. Okay, let's go back to the hotel. And so I think that is one of the problems with overtourism.
Right, that's spot on right there. Yeah, some people just checking off, you know, lists on their boxes or their bucket list or their life list, whatever they want to call it these days, and not really immersing themselves into the destination. And that does create a pileup because there are a lot of people in this world, and there's a lot of people who want to see and do so many things of the world. And then there's, you know, those types of travelers that, you know, are never really going to change, and they want to see, you know, the three best things, you know, the three most popular things, if you will, and that's sometimes, you know, links in synonymous with the best, if you will. It's, again, that's all subjective, but then you just have hordes of massive people that are descending upon the same place over and over again during the peak times, because that's, you know, times when some Americans can only travel. They can only get out in the summertime, and that's just when everybody else is out there. And overtourism doesn't necessarily mean a place is too crowded. You know, it could mean that tourism drives behaviors. You mentioned, you know, tourists behaving badly, which has been quite the rise that we've seen domestically here. And you've also seen plenty of cases in Europe, Italy for sure, where, you know, the behaviors are unsustainable or harmful to the destination. And you've got to react. You've got to do something as a destination, because it just is not sustainable to keep doing, you know, the same old, and these issues continue to pop up.
We are really seeing the effects on the communities when you have these tourists, whether it's a city or a nature-centric destination, but you have in high season, the tourists just descend, and they descend there, and there needs to be cleanup, and there needs to be barricades, or there needs to be people to make sure they don't hurt themselves, that type of thing. But they descend down, and it's almost feast or famine for that community. And so say that community is already financially does not have financial stability. And then suddenly when that season's over, the locals have gone because they can't live where the tourists descend. So the locals are gone. And then you had the local restaurants and the local tour guides and all those people, the workers and the tourism workers who no longer have that income that they had in the peak season. And then the locals are no longer there to support it. And that's what happens, in my opinion, long-term when a place is over-touristed, is they start losing the locals who can support them in the off-season. So then suddenly they're struggling financially. The locations, the cities are going into debt, the countries are going into debt, and it's feast. Yeah, that's great. But then there's also famine with that too. And then the responsibility to clean up after the hordes leave.
Yeah, it's a tough thing out here. So let's dive into some of these destinations that are really standing out on the topic of over-tourism. What are you seeing a lot?
Gosh, you know, definitely there's definitely some of the big tier cities, and not the whole cities, but I mentioned Paris, Rome, London, those cities, definitely in areas of the city, you do see how it's over-touristed, but also small places like, for example, Cinque Terre. Cinque Terre, back in the 90s, it was on this, you know, this author's backdoor book, and it was truly a backdoor. But what's happened is people are still touting it as this quaint backdoor place when it just has hordes of tourists in it. And these are small, teeny tiny little towns with hundreds and thousands of people there all the time. Costa Rica has dealt with over tourism. And then of course you've got Bali and Phuket and places like that as well. There just seems to be those places everybody wants to go. And there's a reason everybody wants to go, is because they are amazing, but there's a lot of people going.
Yeah. Yeah. And social media has certainly amplified it for a lot of these destinations because they are beautiful and they're very picturesque and people want that shot. They, you know, want to be included. They have FOMO and they want that in their photo library, or they want a selfie of them there where, you know, their friends were, or where they saw their, you know, a famous person there or anything like that. So that certainly impacts. You mentioned, you know, Phuket. Yeah. They, you know, shutting down beaches and, you know, beautiful beaches that were, you know, so loved and by locals and tourists, and, you know, places you can't really access anymore because, you know, too many crowds have kind of ruined things. Venice isn't, I feel like almost, I don't want to say the poster child, but it just seems like one of the destinations that's really kind of the big one up there that is just continuing to fight it more so than, I mean, a lot of places have the over-tourism issues, but Venice seems like it's constantly fighting the adding the day tripper fee in there. Amsterdam's another one that's, you know, is popping up and, you know, changing, you know, ports of calls and how many cruise ships can come in and how many people, you know, they've revamped their red light district area to change the hours because of those tourists behaving badly. So yeah, it's a lot of Europe, yeah. You know, but yeah, like you mentioned with Thailand has seen its issues. And then domestically here, you've got Hawaii is, you know, contemplating adding fees too, and facing its own issues of residents not too thrilled about how tourists are behaving, and especially post COVID here, it's amplified too.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to throw the Amalfi Coast in there as well. Mm. And it's one of my favorite places on the planet. And it's just, I love it. It's beautiful. And, but there's just so many people who descend on, again, these small, tiny towns. And so their answer is just to raise the price. And yeah. So that's definitely one way to do it. But yeah, it's becoming more and more prevalent as travel becomes more and more accessible, which is a good thing, but how do we manage it?
Right. Yeah. It's a tough topic for sure. You mentioned price, which kind of jumps me into my next point here. How is really over tourism? And I guess price probably plays a role for sure on things, but how's that affected your approach in selling to your clients? You know, did the clients bring it up at all, or do you wait and do you bring it up, you know, just as a cautionary thing? How do you think travel advisors play a role in, you know, over tourism, responsible tourism issues as they handle, you know, client requests?
Typically for my clients and some of my colleagues, typically we are driving that conversation. A lot of times they'll come to us with their wish list for their next travel. Part of our helping them craft this beautiful itinerary is also advising them. And so it's like, okay, so you can come here. So, okay, you can go to the Amalfi Coast. It is crowded. It is peak season and it's going to be expensive. And we may be too late to even get a place. And so, but we do drive that, and we do in other destinations. Like Cinque Terre is a really good one because a lot of people come to me and that's really on their list that they want to see. And I just have to explain to them how crowded it is, especially on the days the cruise ships are, which seems to be almost every day in peak season, when the cruise ships are there and they're packed like sardines from train to train, and those beautiful trails from, there's only a couple of the trails open, and the easier trails are still not open after many, many years after those mudslides. And it is beautiful. It's stunningly beautiful, but it is so full of people. And so we have to tell them that. I think it's our job to tell them when is a good time to go, not a good time to go, or at least prepare them. If they still want to go, I will send people to Positano any day. I love it. I love it. It's beautiful. But I do have to preface it.
Yeah, you got to be upfront for sure, because you're going to have those headstrong clients who are like, this is what I'm doing. This is what I want. This is the only time I can go. What do I need to know? And, you know, it's a tough one for them. But I think that's where the value of a travel advisor really shines too, and showcasing your expertise of, you know, these are things you got to be prepared for, because over tourism is quite a thing, you know, throughout Europe. And there are other places that you can guide, you know, travelers to experience on that. Where do you think the over tourism topic will really be, you know, in the next 5-10 years? Is this a never ending battle that where nobody really wins? Or do you think, you know, we'll continue to see really price change and fees and that sort of things just continue to hike up and hike up?
I hope this still continues to be a subject that we talk about, because I think that's what is going to help the over tourism. So I think you can have this is going to cost you more to go, the stick of, hey, we've got an entrance fee and all that. That could possibly keep some people out. I don't know how much €5 a day will keep people out, but yeah, we'll see. But I think also, as travel advisors, as travel writers, as other people in the industry, I think we also have a responsibility to look at and recommend emerging destinations. We need to find those. If you like, and it's becoming more popular, it makes my heart so happy. If you like this, then try this. Or, hey, have you thought about Colombia? Have you thought about, okay, you like to river cruise? What about river cruising in Colombia? Or what about going to see a village? Or what about, I mean, there's just so many. You like to hike. Okay, how about Patagonia? Or how about going to Salta? And it falls on us to continue to pique the curiosity of the travelers to look for new places that are going to help these communities. And I think also partnering with suppliers who are invested in the local culture, who aren't just trying to turn communities into commodities, who are really there. And the reason that we want to do that is because if they feel a connection to those communities, they're also going to feel a connection with our travelers and want them to emotionally invest in that as well. They're going to want them to have this amazing time because they love their destination. So I think it's important to also have partners who are responsible in that area.
Yeah, very well said. I think, yeah, working with the right people, and, you know, that can go a long way in this industry and in helping grow more responsible tourists out there. It's all about educating the consumer as well of, you know, the off the beaten path destinations is a very popular buzzword phrase, but it is true that the more and more of those places really need their shine and could use, you know, our dollars versus, you know, a destination that's continuing to, you know, be super crowded. So great insights here. I really appreciate it, Becky. Any closing advice you'd like to pass on to our traveler advisor listeners heading into the summer here as we wrap up on the podcast?
Oh gosh, you know, this summer, I know we've been working like crazy. A lot of us thought we had the summer wrapped up and then we had all the last minute. So my advice is just give some time to yourself. Maybe take a Friday afternoon off, maybe take every Friday afternoon off and actually take a vacation. I know we're going to be dealing with travelers through the summer, but find those moments where you can recharge because we're going to be back in it again soon. So
right. I think that's great advice. Yeah. Find that work-life balance and get the quality me time out there because it's certainly important. Becky, thank you so much for jumping on the podcast and talking all things travel. Okay. Where can people reach out to you or follow you? Anything if they want to get in touch, anything you want to plug, fire away.
Sure. My Instagram. My Instagram is mybellatravel. And then, of course, Facebook is Bella Travel Planning. And then you can find me on my website, mybellatravel.com.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Becky. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Eric.
That is all the time we have for this week's show. Really appreciate you listening out there. Stay tuned for more as the podcast will be back. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.